Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live.
Thank you for those that are continuing to follow us on Facebook. And before I forget, Happy New Year to all those that are watching us on social media and Facebook. And later on, if you download the podcast, we want to wish everyone a happy and healthy New Year as we kick off 2020. It's appropriate that as we are the first podcast in the year in 2020, I have Jack Russo in here with me. Most of you are familiar with Jack. Welcome.
Well, thanks, Joe. Happy New Year. I haven't seen you for a while. It's like
been a couple weeks.
I was getting a little anxious here. Like, have I been thrown off the show? And what's going on? Have I been displaced by others?
Not really, as much as trying to take a little reprieve and some time off to enjoy the holidays before 2020 kicks off. So, just a reminder before we get started, for those that are maybe just watching it for the first time, you haven't download the podcast, if you will. You can do that by going online and just type in Real Estate Radio Live anywhere, Stitcher and Apple, any of those types of things, anywhere where you find the podcast. You can go to our website, which is RE Radio Live as well. The focus for 8 years now on the show, we did radio, live radio for 6 or 7 years, and now podcasting for a couple of years is education and information, and what we've really done is expanded the podcast now, and we're doing some different shows that are really not so much related to real estate as they are the community and business. And Jack and I started this show, was it in 18?
Yeah, it was
late 18.
I think it was like March.
Starting something new?
Yeah, it was starting something. We did a whole series about how to get started, and then we started in 2019,
growing.
Right. Yeah. And you could say we should probably cover this year selling or exiting, but I think it's a little too early.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you really have to grow for a number of
years. I was just going to say.
You don't get to exit
that
early.
No, that's true, yeah. Right? I think we need to spend more some time with growing, right? Because that's a big, as you look at this phase or this step, whatever you want to look at, they're starting, but don't you think the in between the growing is, I mean, that's most of the activity that takes place?
Most of the activity is growing, and growth historically in my life has been a long-term thing with most of the clients I have. But there are people that believe, well, if you haven't grown and succeeded by the time you're 5 years old, then you probably should be killed, which is crazy to me. No, it's true. I mean, it's like nutty. And you see VCs that say, yeah, if you're not growing at 40% a year consistently, we should just kill it. Hmm. And I just about fall off my chair whenever they say that to me, because I say, what? I mean, normal growth shouldn't necessarily be precluded. And if something's growing, you know, 10-20%, that's substantial.
Yeah.
That's significant. And it's a slog for a lot of people, because a lot of people don't want to use venture capital.
Yeah.
But venture capitalists want to believe that fast growth companies grow really, really fast, and if they're not growing fast, they should be sold or killed.
Yeah.
And you see that happen.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, because a lot of good ideas along the way get killed.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they never can get resurrected for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the topics I think we should try to cover, and it might be a multi-series topic, is there's a bunch of new laws in California. And we can't go over all of them, but we can talk about the ones that in particular are going to have an impact on business in ways that are going to generate more litigation down the road that you'll see as class action lawyers and others get their hands on these laws. There's going to be a series of companies that say, wow, I had no idea that law had the impact. I'm going to drop a footnote here.
Okay.
Many, many years ago, during the original George Bush, Bush 43, you know, the father, not the son, as president, he passed a series of laws that created the American with Disabilities Act.
Right, remember the ADA, remember that.
And, you know, this feels like decades ago, it was decades ago, and we're only seeing kind of the tsunami effect of that law on business, where literally businesses that don't have correct parking and don't have
elevators,
the right toilets, and the lawyers have all, like the class action lawyers and the other lawyers, have piled in And, you know, there's literally a bit of a crisis right now in the federal courts where there's so many of these ADA cases that the judges are, like, saying, half of my civil docket is these ADA cases. And the point I want to make is the law may seem, oh, that's innocuous. It's just, like, something that helps, you know, a certain class of people or does this or does that. But the tsunami effect is often the litigation that inspires sometimes years later. So you have to have that in mind as you start to review the laws.
Okay.
And a big one that we could spend a lot of time on is this California version of privacy.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's spend the majority of the show on that one, because that's a big one, right?
It's a very big one, and it really ties into what I've said for a while, which is who owns your data.
Right.
And should you own, as a matter of law, never to be varied by contract, your data? Because it changes the game if you own your data and a company like Facebook or Google or Microsoft or Amazon or any of these big silos don't own the data anymore.
So to be clear too, Jack, I mean, because this is pretty interesting and extensive. When we say data, are we assuming personal data?
Yes.
So I know when we log on, we get the cookies and we get the people are watching and listening and all that stuff.
Yes.
That's different. This is your personal information.
Yeah, and I want to distinguish between kind of like the snapshot of getting you on and the storage, collection, and compilation. Because what a lot of companies have always believed is, well, if I give you a free service, I get the data, and I get to store it, I get to keep it. Well, of course, the Europeans, I get to sell it, and I get to do a lot of things with it. The Europeans kind of saw the imbalance because most of the companies are, of course, American companies and the consumers are European, and they passed the GDPR, which is the General Data Protection Regulation, with stiff penalties saying you cannot even store that data for more than the necessary period of your usage, which might be just like microseconds. It might literally be you get to log on, you get to sort of access whatever you're accessing, and then you're done. The equivalent of there's no record of the transaction. There's no history file. There's no keeping it up. So people looked at that and said, well, wait a minute. How are you going to do anything that enables you to take advantage of the data? How are you going to do something that actually allows you to do something with that data? So I want to contrast something, because in China, at least so far as I know, there isn't anything equivalent to the GDPR. And there isn't anything equivalent to the California law. So the Chinese are allowing Chinese companies to collect all this data. Now, why is that an advantage for them? They get to do their AI programs with that data to enable them to accelerate the development of their artificial intelligence program. And some of this argumentation has been made about why you should allow companies to have this data, because we're going to be at a competitive disadvantage. This is the argument. So there's a sort of a trade-off in policy here, which is if the Chinese or Russians or you name whatever other country have programmers that can take advantage of big data that's stored, collected, you know, presumably separate from what's called the PII, the personally identifiable information, there's an advantage to those companies competitively in the world markets, because they're going to produce products that work better. Certain products that you say, God, why is China's artificial intelligence software so much better than the U.S.? Because they have access to data. So part of what's going on is this fight, well, what if we make it untraceable? And the question becomes, how much do you have to do to really segregate out things? Because I can just look at you and say, if I know that you have an office in Los Gatos, even if I don't have your name, but you're in the real estate business, you're in the lending business, and you're in Los Gatos, there's probably, and your name starts with a J, there's probably like only five other people that make that match. And pretty much, you know, you've got so much other information, your voice is all over the internet, you're a famous guy.
I don't know about
your
that.
Your picture's all over. No, we talk about this because we leave behind so much in what's called sometimes the data exhaust of our lives. Of course, we get a lot of convenience out of it, as my wife likes to say, she couldn't live without Google.
But this is kind of, let's get specific to California and granular what people need to know, but this is an interesting. We don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but as I listen to you, Jack, what I hear too is this is really a the big plan from the Googles of the world and everybody else. They knew this all along, right? They knew, like, every time you search, every time everybody says, well, Joe, you know, you, if you want to be known, you want people to know, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to be on Google, you got to be on Facebook, you got to be on. So was that motivated by business, or do you think they really, the bigger picture was, we're going to get as much as we can on everybody?
I think they stumbled. I don't think there was some radically big plan at the formation of Google. I think the Google founders were like, search is really junky, and we're going to improve it.
Okay.
And we're going to add a great business model to it. Mm-hmm. Once they went to the next step of, and we're going to really distinguish ourselves by having really, really smart people. We're only going to hire super smart people. And they got enough of those people together, and those super smart people said, if we have all this data, and we have all this computer science, and we have all this programming talent, we can put these three things together and create amazing programs that add to human intelligence.
Right.
That, I think, became a light bulb moment for them when they said, we're not so much in search.
Right.
We're actually in intelligence.
Intelligence.
We're enabling a more intelligent society. And, you know, my wife, PhD from Stanford, says, I get a super amount of intelligence from Google. I don't personally share her conviction, but she likes the fact that they track, because she keeps everything on and I keep everything off, but she likes that they track every movement. So she showed me a calendar for last year, 2019, of all the places around the world that she and I, or she alone, because she has gigs that she does all over the world, where they, and it was like the entire world map. It was like 60
cities. So she's excited about it, but most people would be a little creeped out with it, right?
Exactly. I was like, why are you happy about this? She said, I could take a snapshot of this and send it to my mom and say, Mom, look at all this great stuff I did in 2019. I said, yeah, but there's like the rest of the world can get to that data. So it was like, it sort of depends on whether you feel, how you feel about privacy, because there's a big controversy. There are some people that think it's a good thing that she's tracked, because if she ever gets into trouble, she probably can be found.
Yeah.
Yet the flip side is you have no privacy, so if some bad people, like maybe an ex-boyfriend or ex-husband or something, wants to start stalking you.
Yeah, I think
you,
the bigger picture with that, the tracking is, I think, it could be for, you know, reasons like that, but I think for more so, don't you think the tracking really helps people market to you?
Absolutely.
Don't you think? I mean, that, I even think that's where you use that. Like, if your wife takes the same types of trips or goes to the same places, guess what? Whatever she's doing along the way.
Right. She's a product.
Right.
And they want to say, we can get to her.
Right.
And we can get to, sorry to say this, you're a middle-aged woman, Lee. Sorry.
We can get she's younger her. Than you,
she's
though.
She's younger. Yes, exactly. She was a lot younger. And she stays in great shape. She was telling me last night, I hike like 20,000 steps, and she said, I've lost a couple of pounds, and she's thin already. And I said, wow. She said, I feel in great shape. In fact, I don't even need any sort of facelift or anything, because all my skin is really tight now. It's like, I don't feel that way. You're doing everything right.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel old. Exactly. So, I mean, just to put out this, because I have to say this ties into it, I was at Stanford Medical School today helping a good person who I hope to drag into the studio, Dr. Walter Bortz, who writes the books While Living to 100.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
We have started an effort to get the Stanford students to see that the future of medicine is what might be called lifestyle changes.
Right.
Which is exactly what Lee does.
Yeah.
Lee lives the lifestyle. She has no medication. She lives the lifestyle. She is like a super athlete. And all these Stanford students, of course, they're all young, they're kind of in their 20s, they're all perky, and of course, we bring in free lunch. That's the inducement. You get a big room of people when you bring in free lunch.
A lot of veggie stuff,
right? Exactly, and they're all in great shape.
Yeah.
And the message from, and Dr. Bortz is going to be 9 years old, is look, you and your patients can truly look forward to living to 100. But how do you think about your human potential over 100 years? Mm. Now, my father and my mother never talked that way. They often thought, gosh, if you can make it to 60 and retire, you're lucky you might have another
five or ten years. They used to do, this is pretty sad, they used to do the retirement commercials and all the media stuff sitting in a rocking chair.
Yes, exactly.
Remember?
Right.
Years ago?
So the way I want to tie it into this is people who are open to this automation tend to think of life as, I'm going to maximize all the value, and whatever computer assistance I can get doing it is a good thing. Bring it on. I'll give them my data. I'm okay with it. They don't worry about the dark side of it, right? Mm-hmm. But people who are more sort of cautious and who hear about all the identity thefts and all the other stuff that happens in the Wild West known as the Internet, they're like, these companies have a lot of data, and if there's a data breach, I'm exposed, and there's not necessarily going to be a remedy. So it's one of these areas where, is your glass half full and brimming, or is your glass mostly empty? And really, it's very, very, there's a divided view. Mm-hmm. You'll see people who will say, these privacy laws need to be enhanced further, and they're talking about it. They're talking about making it even stricter, to the point where people like Facebook will eventually have to buy the data from you, and not just for the free service. I mean, for the equivalent of, we'll put some coins into your account to pay for it.
Yeah, I'm going to get more specific on how it affects California, but I mean, I'm of the mindset, and I don't know if this is, it's not right or wrong, it's I get so frustrated with, because I'm an efficiency kind of fanatic.
Yes.
I would love to be able to use Retina and fingerprints for everything. Like when I walk up to anything I do, just look into a thing and have a scan, and then whatever access, so I don't have to remember all these damn passwords and all this other stuff. So a lot of people would say, are you crazy, Joe?
Well, you got to get an iPhone 10 because it's all face.
Is that right?
Identity.
All recognition and all that?
It's all, you put the thing in front of your face and it opens up. Of course, your face is stored.
That's what I mean.
you got to accept the fact that your face is going to be stored and recognize, and they say it's going to be protected.
I don't know what the hell they do with my face.
But your point is, you are in the camp of Lee, which is many, many people who are like, hey, I just want this stuff to work.
And efficient, and
right.
I'm on that.
You're in that camp.
Yeah.
You're not in the camp of like people who are, how do I get off the internet?
Yeah.
Like yesterday, I was talking to someone saying, I'm just getting rid of all my social media.
I hear that a lot too.
I'm just getting out of it. I think it's a time waster. And they just are like, that, I'm going to focus on other things. And there is a backlash that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the rest of the world is actually climbing on board. So Facebook internationally is growing faster than it's growing in the U.S.
Domestically,
In fact, I would almost argue, if we talk about this, is part of the effect of regulation such that the Facebooks of the world will have a bigger customer base outside the United States where there's less regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the regulation imposes restrictions on what, and even just California.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. We have 50 states in the United States. California decides to essentially impose a GDPR-style privacy law that puts all sorts of restrictions on what companies do with data, and requires all these notices. You might be noticing now there's all these notices that come up that say, press a button to tell us we can't sell your data. Press a button to tell us, of course, you know, you're spending all your time pressing the buttons, which you don't want to do, right? You want to just like be able to log in and say no to everything or yes to everything or let's make a deal. I'm waiting for the let's make a deal part. Because the statute doesn't prevent an arm's length true negotiated deal where you trade for like some cryptocurrency.
Okay.
So let's say you're Facebook and you have a cryptocurrency called Libra, something they said they were coming out with, the government pushed back, maybe they're negotiating it. Why do you think they want Libra? Libra is a way to begin to say to you and others, please let us buy some more data from you.
And we'll put it in your account.
It in your account.
Yeah.
It'll be worth something.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go up in value. It'll allow you to buy goods and services, and eventually, yes, you are starting to sell your data. So you could say a change in the game that California put into effect, probably for very different reasons, created a new market, which is your data just can't simply be taken. It has to be negotiated.
Well, I could see that going all kinds of interesting directions.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine if the data is really valuable? Someone might say, you know, we'll give you equity or stock. right?
Well, there's...
I mean, I know that's a little strange, but
there's versions of that. Yeah. There's a company right now called Stash, which everyone thought, you know, what's your differentiator? It's a way to essentially easily open a stock account. But then what they did is, once you open the stock account, they said, well, if you buy certain goods and services over our website, we'll give you small bits of shares in those companies. So it kind of tied this whole thing together. And then it went out to the companies and said, hey, we have customers that are willing to, like, buy your goods and services through our platform, that you should support us. So it creates this sort of bigger market, right? So you could argue this is a way that companies will reach certain people directly and get a lot more information along the way, through a voluntary exchange for value. Now, I don't see that freedom of contract being taken away yet by these statutes. The question is, how do you negotiate that in a relatively low transaction cost way? Right now, some notice comes up that says, you know, do you agree, or I assume you agree or disagree, you say, I disagree. I don't want any of this. The next notice that should come up, whoa, what if we offered you $10 a month? What if we offered to pay you?
So how different is California, this new law with California, in the sense for the data? They really, everybody has to notify you whether you want. So if you say...
And you have to be able to opt out, and the default is opt out, and the default is the companies have to respect that you've made that choice. Now, companies like Facebook might decide to, like, push the envelope because a lot of their business depends upon being able to collect data. Or they may try to sort of, hey, we're not personally identifying you enough for you to complain about it. Because in the abstract, if I want to sit on the corner and just count cars that pass by, there's public cars that are passing by. There's aggregated data. I don't really know necessarily, because I don't have a license plate reader. If I was a police officer and I have a license plate reader, I'd have a lot more data, right? They can read that data, but we can't.
Right.
I guess I could take a picture of every license plate and try to piece stuff together, but fundamentally that data is private. But I can still get aggregate data about what's going on. That's what Facebook is saying is still valuable. That aggregate data is still valuable, and that can still be used. But it's not as granular. Right, because part of what where the trouble is here is there's so many data brokers that even Facebook buys data from to enhance its own data, and then it becomes like there's really a dossier about you. You know, today, in truth, there probably is outside the U.S., maybe in Russia, maybe in China, maybe elsewhere, a dossier about you. Some criminals likely have scraped enough data off of all the public sites about you to say the minute there's a data breach where we could buy something that's really more valuable about Joe Cachera, we can tie together all of that dossier of other data, and we can use it to infiltrate his accounts and maybe convince your stockbroker or your lender or someone, please make me a loan because I'm Joe Cachera. Let me give you all the verifying information. Now, it probably is going to get to the point where certain transactions, like the way real estate is done with the thumbprint, maybe that's the future. Maybe you literally will have to, for certain size transactions, literally give a thumbprint or literally give something that's really personally identifiable about you.
Do you see California is always on the cutting edge? Some people would say cutting edge. Some people would call it different. But would you? Do you see, or is it too early to tell, if every other states are watching to see what they may want
they
to
are,
react to?
They are watching, and I think the next big state, you know, there's three big states in the United States that seem to lead the charge. New York is one, and Florida is the third. And, you know, those three states, if you kind of look at them, they do often do stuff that either outrages people or makes them happier. You know, Florida might go the other way, right, to some degree, but New York will probably follow California, and then if some other states fall in, maybe Texas will go the other way. And, you know, you have this almost political, you know, this a certain political attitude about how do you feel about your privacy. Well, if you're in Texas, man, and you decide to do stuff, but if you're a national company, which most venture capitalized companies are, they want to be international as well, they have to live with essentially the lowest common denominator.
Right.
So if California's law says you have to do this, they're going to do it throughout the United States. They're going to do it throughout the world. You could argue they did the same thing with GDPR.
Mm-hmm.
So to the extent people are GDPR compliant, they're probably 90% of the way to being compliant with California law, but not 100%. In fact, there are areas where the GDPR is tougher than California law. For example, GDPR requires you to have a data protection officer that's identified. So you're the CEO of the company. You're also the DPO because you're the responsible party. It's a little bit like we're going to force some accountability, and then we're going to be able to audit you, and then we're going to be able to fine you. And of course, this ruffles anyone's feathers, thinking, "Gosh, you know."
Well, it should give us some kind of sign for those that follow corporations or companies. You can see how this has evolved. Now, the reason, what I mean by this is, you know this. So now there's CIOs.
Yes.
Right. There's CTOs.
Yes.
Who would have guessed 20 years ago? What do you mean? Why do we need a chief technology officer?
Yes.
Why do we need a chief information officer?
And now it's a CSO, chief security officer.
Right.
And they're all supposed to sit around the table and discuss how do we make sure we comply with not only what the customers want, but what the law demands, which might be very different. And they all have to have certain sort of foresight in saying, look, the tide is going this way. So I can't imagine, it would be nice to spoof this somehow. I was hoping the Silicon Valley TV show would do a show about this. How do these people sit around a table and actually decide, well, you know, the trend seems to be that we're under a lot of pressure here to clean up our act. What should we do? How do they have that discussion? Because if you really are emulating that discussion, you either say, well, I guess we can kind of like close down certain divisions that fundamentally sell data, or we can like decide that we're going to negotiate with customers and only certain customers that opt in, where we really do a voluntary exchange of some sort, are the customers that are giving us the data, and the rest of the people are using our platform for free. We're not getting much out of that, right?
Well, who knows where it's going to go? A couple more minutes left. How do you want to summarize this for those that are listening now and then later downloading the podcast for them to have a better idea of how they're acting?
So first of all, if you're doing business in California, which most companies are, you got to be aware that California tends to be out there, and there are new laws, of which this first one, the California Consumer Privacy Act, CCPA, just took effect. Obviously, there was a lot of notification about it. There is certainly going to be a lot of litigation about it. We'll see how it lands. But you have to sit down and audit all of your terms of service, all of your notifications, all of your opt-in, opt-out, all the way you do if you're registering someone. It's a whole new cycle.
Wow.
Now, a lot of it's been standardized, and you see, actually, I've been sort of myself auditing different companies that have my data, they're all seem to be taking a different view. Some of them are like, press this button and you're confirmed as opted out of everything. Others are like, read this long stuff. I mean, you could spend half your life reading this stuff, and I know most people wonder, like, where would I find the time to do that? Like, if I'm going to use this service. But if you're running a business that essentially collects data, you have to be aware of the laws, you have to comply with them. You have to think about what will some class action lawyer do if I don't comply with it, and then what should I anticipate for the future? Because if I'm on the board of directors of a company that's like a Facebook or a Google or any of these big silos, Amazon included, I'm probably going to assume that I'm going to start paying for this data.
I would guess.
And I'm starting to think about, well, how do I do that?
Or, in the case of Amazon, give us your data and, you know, no longer pay for your annual Prime account or something, right?
Something
of value.
Something that has real value,
right,
that has a real voluntary transaction to it, and that represents, and then we'll get into, like, how fair do you have to be? Because, look, certain people's data, like Elon Musk's data, is probably a lot more valuable than other people's data, right? I mean, I wonder about this, at what level does it have to be more granular?
And valuable to who?
Yeah, and valuable too, right.
So before we leave, we were talking a lot about a lot of legal aspects. So those that are listening to the show, watching the show, or downloading later, the right person is right here in the studio
to contact.
Thank you. Give them a remind everybody where they can reach you.
Jack Russo, Computer Law Group. We have offices in Silicon Valley, Palo Alto, and San Francisco. We still answer the phone, 650-327-9800. Jack at Computer Law. That's Computer L-A-W. I hear people say, Computer Log? No. I probably should have gotten that domain. I'm sure people will make the mistake, but it's Computer L-A-W, one word, computerlaw.com. And, of course, the website is www.computerlaw.com.
Yeah, anybody that's starting business, contractual, entrepreneurs, you might get flooded with calls, actually, people going, should I click on this notification?
I'll just add with the fact that people are confused and often think, gosh, you know, I guess I have to do business this way. Is there any way around it? Can I waive it? And the answer is this stuff can't be just negotiated out without some real notification and exchange.
Right.
So it's not getting easier.
Right.
Just put it that way. The cost of customer acquisition has fundamentally increased, is a way to think about it. And expect it to continue to increase and expect it to actually become something where you have to pay for data.
Right. And we got to close out here too, but you're right. I mean, I know for a fact in the banking world, I forget Wells Fargo or someone else, obviously in the middle of all this myself, a bundle select, but I think if I'm not mistaken, someone like a Wells Fargo or a major bank would say that if they get someone to opt in the sense of just open a checking account or agree to open a checking account, they say that's worth $1,500 or $1,600 because they know that it just doesn't stop there. They get a credit card or whatever.
Right.
They have all the data that shows
right.
that. So, to your point, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. It just depends on who's valuable to who.
Right. And and fundamentally, the rules, in my view, are changing to support a view that an individual is going to own more and more, and companies are going to have to negotiate for more and more.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be the way it's historically been, where one of the reasons these companies have grown so fast is fundamentally they can collect the data fast and then use it quickly and effectively to either bring more conveniences, which is, you know, one view, or to put more people at risk, which is another view. Now, both views are valid. They're trying to balance them, is what the law is trying to do here.
So as we sign off, here's a message to all those listening, watching, I should say, listening later. Make yourself as valuable as possible.
There you go.
That way you can sell your information as much as you can. Thanks again for tuning in. Thank you again for those that are all following us on Facebook. Jack, thanks for the show.
Yeah, happy New Year.
Take care. Have a great afternoon. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.